Good morning. Our reading today is from the book of Matthew. Listen to what the Spirit is saying. Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. And taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed them, and broke the loaves, and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled, and they took up what was left over of the broken pieces and filled 12 baskets. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides the women and children. Hear what the Spirit is saying.
So over the last month, our senior pastor, Pastor Ginger, has led us through the book of Matthew, through the parables of Matthew, and these parables have been really random. There are things that talk about treasures and coins and wheat and barley and maybe even quinoa. I don't know, but these parables are not always easy to understand. However, this morning, the scripture that was read was not a parable. If you were listening to the text, we today have landed in the middle of Matthew telling the account of Jesus and his disciples in a really, really hard place in their ministry. And so the scripture starts with Jesus being on a boat. But if we go back to verse 12, we will learn that Jesus has just received some horrifying news. His cousin, his best friend, the forerunner, and the person who baptized him in the River Jordan has died. John the Baptizer was beheaded by Herod, and Jesus is now on a boat. I believe that Jesus is on this boat because Jesus is sad, and Jesus is grieving, and Jesus needs to escape from ministry for a while. How many people have ever needed to get away for a while? And so Jesus, being fully human and also fully divine, felt this loss intimately and deeply. And so Jesus is on a boat. However, the crowds keep coming. They will not leave Jesus alone. Jesus's name have gone out so far and wide that the people have found Jesus on the boat. And there's thousands of them coming and trying to be with Jesus. And so Jesus is full of compassion, the scripture says, and he heals their sick. This is a beautiful story until the healing service lasted way longer than expected. The sun is going down, and now these thousands of people are hungry. And the disciples come to Jesus and they say, Jesus, there's a problem. These people are hungry, so how about you send them away so that they may have something to eat? The part about that scripture that struck me so deeply is that how can you be intimate friends with the bread of life, yet worry about people being hungry? Jesus is the bread of life. Jesus was going around raising the dead, having all these miracles, and the disciples still were worried about Jesus being able to feed these people. And so how did this idea of scarcity or not have enough come into our theology? Well, let's start at the beginning. It's a very good place to start. And when we learn to read the Bible, we start in the book of Genesis. And in the book of Genesis, we find our God is creating ex nihilo. Ex nihilo is the Latin phrase which means out of nothingness. God is creating out of nothingness. And we know the rhythm of Genesis 1. It says, "Let there be light," and it was good. Let there be, and it was good. This rhetoric of abundance, this creation out of nothingness. God is giving us the theology of abundance. And we hear this language all throughout Genesis. You are blessed to be a blessing. And even when the people of God were kicked out of the garden, God said to them, go be fruitful and multiply. Our original language is language of love and abundance. However, things go awfully wrong in chapter 47. In chapter 47, we encounter Pharaoh and his dream. And Pharaoh has a dream of a famine. And in this dream of a famine, Pharaoh decides that we need to start rationing off food. And so the people of God, they say, well, we will participate in this rationing. And the first year, they ration their cattle. The second year, they ration their homes. Does this sound familiar? And the third year, they ration themselves. And then we find the people of God in slavery. This idea of never having enough. This idea of there's not enough for everyone to have something. The theology of scarcity. Even when they are given their freedom, in the book of Exodus, we find that the children of God are still wrestling with scarcity. On their way out of the wilderness, they look at each other and they say, maybe we should have stayed in Egypt. At least we had melons there. At least we knew that we would eat there. And this God that's so awesome, in the middle of the wilderness, God provides them with manna. And manna actually means, literally translated in the Hebrew to mean, what is it? Every morning they would wake up to this, what is it? Every morning they would wake up to this daily bread. And because these people were so scared and their theology of scarcity was driving them, guess what they would do with this daily bread? They would hoard it. They would hold on to it. And it would rot. My brothers and sisters, we cannot bank, nor invest, nor store up God's generosity. God's daily bread does not work that way. And so throughout the biblical text, we find ourselves wrestling with God's abundance and Pharaoh's scarcity. The theology of scarcity distorts our relationship with one another. The theology of scarcity skews our idea of what it means to be in kingdom relationship with one another. We become the battle of the fittest. I need to preserve my things for myself. It sets us up for the us versus the them, the haves versus the have-nots. And then we are like the disciples where we say, send them away. There's no room at this table for you. There's no room on this pew for you. There's no room in this church for you. There's no room in this neighborhood. There is no room in this country for you. The theology of scarcity, there's not enough. The great theologian Walter Brueggemann says, the great contradiction in Christianity is that we have more and more money and less generosity. Less and less public money for the needy, less charity for our neighbors. And like the disciples, even in our own Christian way, we are very quickly to say, send them away. There are side effects to this scarcity, my friends. At 7:45 in the morning, I wake up with my child and we journey from Ward 7 of Washington, D.C., and we travel downtown to the DuPont Circle area because he goes to school around the corner. And every morning I have to explain to my child why that there are belongings on the street that belong to people. Why there are people's whole households sitting on the corner. This is the side effect of scarcity. And as we travel through the city, we get to 14th Street. And Roland, if you want to buy a condo on 14th Street for 799 square feet and $550,000, you can have one. The side effects of scarcity. Washington, Virginia, and Maryland, they spend approximately $14,000 to send one child to school each year. In Washington, Virginia, and Maryland, they spend approximately $38,000 to $40,000 per year to house one inmate. And do you know that for every child that's incarcerated, we could send them to Sidwell Friends or the Phil School? The side effects of the scarcity of theology. And so, my friends, I ask all of us, what is the Pharaoh that's holding us captive? Where did we get our theology of scarcity? Where did we realize that there was not enough, and so we hoard? So Jesus responded to the disciples just like Jesus always does. And Jesus says, you bring me what you have and have the crowd sit down. And Jesus took the fish and the five loaves. And just like we will do here with this bread, Jesus lifted up and blessed it. And there was more than enough. My friends, Jesus is not asking us to be saviors ourselves. Jesus is not asking us to do anything more than to bring our gifts, our talents, and our treasures to him so that he may bless it and do the multiplying. All around us in this congregation, look around, we are a plentiful, resourceful congregation. And do not get me wrong, I am not making little of the struggle of everyday life in this country, especially in Washington, D.C., where the income gap is 59%. The poorest person in this city that gets government assistance makes $10,000 a year. And the lowest rent in this city is $15,000 a year in public housing. I'm not making light of the struggle, but what I am saying this, my brothers and sisters, is that we serve a God of abundance. And once we realize how to really do this tricky math of giving and receiving, we'll be on to something. So this morning, you did not hear a parable that was complicated. You heard a very interesting story that was, again, complicated. How do we untangle the web of scarcity? We start here at this table. The disciples wanted to give the problem to Jesus, and Jesus gave it right back to them. And Jesus said, come unto me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Lay your yoke upon me. Our sad, grieving Jesus said, come unto me. And so today, my brothers and sisters, I invite you to this table. There's only one loaf, but I promise that every single person in here will be fed. Come to this table, all, and all means. So this table is prepared for all of us. So join me, join us, and I challenge you, I double dog dare you, to give your treasure and your being to God and watch God do the amazing work of the multiplication of the kingdom. But God's just asking us to show up.